What is it? This is the reading?
H.C. Khanna. H.C.
Is he from Mountain Park?
Yeah, okay. 1975. Sri Harichand Khanna, industrialist of Kanpur, and his wife, Srimati Premavati Khanna, are all devotees of Sri Bhagavan. You can see him in the archival film. Mm-hmm. And Bhagavan Mahasamadhi Day, they had his body, you know, facing, the east, you know, in the new hall, mm-hmm. and they would walk by. Remember mm-hmm. the scene? Yes. You see him and his wife walking by, going in front. We know him very well. We used to stay in this cottage. He built a cottage in Mamorgi Katham. Like Mohan's father built a cottage there. Mm-hmm. And he had a room on the top floor. And he had a beautiful view of the mountain, because there's nothing growing up there. Mm-hmm. We used to stay up there often.
Also, he used to stay just annexed to the Mamorgi Katham, that small room. That also he built.
Okay. Harichand Khanna, industrialist of Kanpur, and his wife, Srimati Premavati Khanna. That's what he called it, cottage, didn't he? Premavati Mohan.
Right.
You see it written on the top. Are all devotees of Sri Bhagavan. Sri Khanna comes of a Punjab family, which had strongly supported from the very beginning the Arya Samaj movement, founded by Swami Dayanand Saraswati. He always felt a strong desire to discover the real I in him. And for several years, he was trying to find this out by himself. Having been brought up in the Arya Samaj tradition, he had no faith in the Guru Chela master-disciple relationship, and therefore refused to seek the help of anyone in his search. In fact, he refused to become the chela of the Sufi saint named Raghuveer Dayalji, with whom he became acquainted in his 30s. And who possessed some supernatural powers, like mind reading, etc. This aversion to become a chela of Raghuveer Dayalji was responsible, in a way, for bringing him into contact with Sri Bhagavan. For in the course of his visits to him, Sri Khanna met one Professor Patnagar, from whom he learned that if he was really interested in finding out the real I, he ought to go to Sri Ramana Maharshi. He also gave Sri Khanna a copy of Upadesaram. At the same time, he learned by a strange coincidence from his father that an interesting article on the Maharshi had appeared in one of the English dailies of Lahore, and that his father had taken down carefully the particulars relating to the abode of Maharshi with the idea of going to him sometime or other. He noted down the address in his diary, so when he found a copy of the Upadesaram on his son's bookshelf, he strongly advised him to go to Tiruvannamalai and see the Maharshi. Accordingly, Sri Khanna came to Tiruvannamalai and had darshan of Sri Bhagavan. The moment he entered the hall and Sri Bhagavan turned his beaming and penetrating and gracious look on him, he was pervaded by a strange feeling of happiness and peace. So he sat there in silence without putting any questions to Sri Bhagavan. But on the following day, he told him that although he had till then no faith in gurus, he had decided the moment he saw Sri Bhagavan that he was his guru, and that even if Sri Bhagavan refused to accept him, he would look upon himself as his disciple. Upon this, Sri Bhagavan said, "In our eyes, everyone is a guru." This was in 1941. Thereafter, Sri Khanna became a staunch devotee of Sri Bhagavan and started coming to the ashram almost every year. In 1946, he brought with him his entire family. His wife, Srimati Premavati, also became a staunch devotee of Sri Bhagavan, with whom she used to talk freely and get her doubts cleared. Both husband and wife were present at the ashram when Sri Bhagavan attained Mahanirvana. In 1965, Sri Khanna constructed a guest house close to the ashram, and after naming it Premavati Khanna Guest House, presented it to the ashram for the use of devotees, including himself and family. He and the members of his family are regular visitors to the ashram, even now. You know, Anil and Sabi.
Chubby, yeah.
Yeah. So Mr. Khanna used to complain to us about his wife. He used to complain to us about his wife. He said, "Nothing bothers her. She just sits there and does her japa, and whatever happened in the family, someone, even grandson died or something, I tell her, and she just shakes it. Nothing affects her." Why is that? And when he passed away, she used to go between, I think there was, how many, four sons, Mohan?
Four sons, yeah.
And one daughter?
Yeah.
She used to travel between each one of them, and she carried the sari she told them she wanted to be cremated in.
Oh. Also, then you stayed with his
what?
Son, right? You stayed with one of his sons.
Yeah, I stayed even with Mr. Khanna up in Bombay.
And
then we would often stay with his son. I know. Ranveer Khanna was the oldest son, so he had the house in Bombay.
Was it the son that passed away in Ramanashram?
Ranveer, no, I don't think so. But he came just before he died.
But the father did.
Yeah, Ranveer. But Ranveer said, he said, my father got angry with me only once. When he was in, his father stayed in Ramanashram until he died. And he was having some health issues. He went down there, he said, "Dad, let's go to Bangalore and get you everything checked up." And he said, first time he really got angry with me, he said, "Here I am, with the only one that will cure the diseases of birth and death, and you want me to go to Bangalore?"
And she's the one, right, the wife, she asked Bhagwan that I've got so much of work.
Yeah.
I don't have time to...
That's in day by day.
And he said, "Just say, I, Naan, that's enough."
Yeah. And so she told me that when Mr. Khanna died, she was making breakfast, gave him tea, turned around, put in the toast, made the toast, turned around, his head was down, and he was gone.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. Just like wow. that. So they have the Khanna day, so family members come every year for that. You know?
And also they celebrate in the ashram itself.
Yeah, they do. They do.
They do a special.
So he's got the samadhi in the ashram.
And the samadhi.
Yeah, he's the only one of the family persons there. Anil, his grandson, came with us on the yatra, remember?
Yeah.
Anil?
Yeah.
Anil and Sabi came?
He's here, too.
And he did the whole thing barefooted. And Sabi was so ecstatic that her husband got so devoted now. It's a funny story how Anil got married to Sabi. Sabi is from a Muslim family. And Ranveer, the oldest son, he was the son of the oldest son. And she And he wanted to elope and marry with her. They met in college, you know. And, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to get permission out of his father. And so they had the other brothers go to the father and say, isn't it about time Anil got married? Said, yeah, so well, who should he marry? He said, whoever he decides, he should get married, that's right. But so finally he agreed and everything. And he said his grandmother was the most gracious to his new wife, you know, mm-hmm. grandmother, Prema Bhakti. And she became more a devotee than Anil and Bhagavan. She had a big life-size photo of Bhagavan, and he can't eat until she does puja in the morning.
Oh, wow.
To Bhagavan.
Chabi is whose daughter, actually?
Chabi.
Yeah, whose daughter?
No, he said Chabi, not Chabi.
No, Chabi is whose daughter?
Oh, Chabi is the other brother.
Yeah.
What's his name? Suresh, is it?
Is it Suresh?
I think so. Uh-huh. She's here in your area, right?
She's in Lanka, yes. She's come to our satsangs.
She's come to our satsangs.
He's come here, Suresh, with Chabi and
mm-hmm.
couple, and the mother came. They came a few times, I think.
They almost made an annual visit. Only last year they didn't come.
Okay. So this is the year Arthur Osborne, this is 1970 issue, 1970. And this is the year Arthur Osborne passed away, the editor of the Mountain Path. Yeah. Mm. They had in memory of Arthur Osborne. So he was born on September 25th, 1906, and he died on August 5th, 1970. I'm not very old for our standards. The death of Mr. Arthur Osborne, which took place in Bangalore on May 8th, will be deeply mourned by Sri Bhagavan's devotees and by students of religion all over the world. In the April 1970 issue of The Mountain Path, introducing Mrs. Osborne's article, How I Came to the Maharshi, he described it as a chapter from their joint works, Our Quest, which he said may or may not be completed. I mean, he was writing a biography, you know, but she completed it. It was completed finally, right? Mm-hmm. By Kitty, I think, in published. Okay. His foreboding proved right. Now Mrs. Osborne has to complete the story all by herself. To the admirers of Mr. Osborne and the Mountain Path, it is a consolation to know that the brave lady has agreed to step into the breach and for the present take charge of the quarterly, which her husband had built up so nobly in so short span of time. After taking a degree in history from Oxford in 1927, Mr. Osborne joined the faculty at the University of Bangkok in Siam. In 1941, well, they skipped the whole thing. He went to Poland. You know what I mean?
That's where he met.
Yes,
yeah, he was teaching. He was teaching there in Poland. In 1941, during World War II, he was arrested and interned by the Japanese. How he had been drawn to Rene Guanan, to the traditional wisdom of the East, and how he came to the Maharshi and found at last what he had been seeking all his life is beautifully described in his book, Ramana Arunachala. One of the great little classics of religious literature, this masterpiece is made up mainly of a series of brilliant and moving articles which he wrote to newspapers in the steady white heat of devotion and the marrow of Sri Bhagavan's Maharnirvana. His wife and three little children had come and settled near the ashram in 1941. Released from the Japanese prison in 1945, Mr. Osborne came straight to South India, put up his own charming little bungalow near the ashram, and lived there almost continuously in the bright serenity of Sri Bhagavan's presence. You know, he went to Calcutta and became principal of a school there.
Yes, yes.
And there was in Halifax, there was a lady from Calcutta who was a school counselor here, mm-hmm. and she was in the same school with him.
Oh, wow. Oh.
During, when he was teaching there, before she came to Nova Scotia here.
Dennis, wasn't the editor of Indian Express also for a while?
What?
Arthur Osborne.
Indian Express?
Editor of Indian Express newspaper.
I think for a short period, right? He was working in Madras. He was working in Madras, yeah. And deciding to read Sri Bhagavan's Path as the straightest and head short and shortest to the summit, Mr. Osborne expounded it with extraordinary clarity and brilliant simplicity in his writings on Sri Bhagavan, inspiring and drawing a vast number of devotees to the path all the world over. In the rhythm of history, Long Men's, that's some book, that's a book, The Rhythm of History, have you heard of it? One notices the broad sweep of the historical knowledge and his capacity for generalization and reflection as a student of world history and of comparative religion. One of his latest works, The Question of Progress, Principal Miller Endowment Lectures, delivered at Madras University and published by the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, discusses the theories of Marx and Toynbee, dwells on the special features of Hinduism and Judaism, and presents Buddhism and Christianity as still living ethnic religions. While degeneration is the ineluctable fate of all religions, there is also the ever-present possibility of regeneration. The Hindu doctrines, rightly interpreted, are true, complete, and valid for all times. Hinduism, Sanatana Dharma, quality, eternal, because dynamic, is evidenced by its long succession of saints and sages from the earliest times to Sri Ramana Maharshi. Buddhism and Christianity in the Light of Hinduism, Ryder and Company, presents the wide-stretching hand. These are his books, you know. They actually published that for some time, I don't know. Buddhism and Christianity in the Light of Hinduism. Wide-stretching band of the Hindu spectrum, including, as it does, the living contents of the religious founded by Buddha and Jesus. The incredible Saya Baba, another book, I don't know. The ashram doesn't publish that one. We got it here in the library. The basic identity between Sri Saya Baba and the Sri Ramana Maharshi is brought out in a few purely Advaitic utterances of Sri Saya Baba, and the use of his miraculous powers is explained by emphasizing his saying, "I give people what they want, so they start wanting what I want to give them." Mr. Osborne's most enduring work was done on Sri Bhagavan. He edited the collected works of Ramana Maharshi and wrote the most popular biography, Ramana Maharshi and Path of Self-Knowledge. These two works, like that admirable compendium, Teachings of Ramana Maharshi in His Own Words, were first published by Ryder and Company and later issued in Indian editions. The biography by Jayco and the other two works by Sri Ramanashrama. While he had thus written with great lucidity and always wisely on Sri Bhagavan, many discerning readers might find that his Ramana Arunachala is the finest gem among them all, for it deals in the most charming and persuasive manner with Sri Bhagavan's uniqueness and universality, with his essential modernity, and his deep spiritual affinity with Gautama Buddha. With his availability and effectiveness as a guru, As founder of the first and first editor of the Ashram Quarterly, The Mountain Path, Mr. Osborne was able to attract excellent articles from a host of eminent writers all over the world. His own editorials succeeded in explaining in the clearest and most simple language the most profound and precious spiritual truths. Besides these leaders, which were connected with the special topics of each issue, and which also preserved a certain continuity of theme, he contributed to the magazine articles and poems written from different points of view and under appropriate names, like Abdullah, Qutbuddin, Sagittarius, H. Sebastian Gibbons, Bodhicitta, Rai Das, and A. Rao. Mm-hmm. You know, if he had issues and he didn't have the article he wanted for those issues, he would write it himself and he would want to choose.
I've seen the name Sagittarius.
Yeah.
What's the last name?
A. Rao. I didn't realize he was...
R-A-O?
No, A. A period Rao.
Rao.
Sagittarius
is also Osborne.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
I've seen that three times.
No,
yeah.
Well, that's from his birth star. Right?
Zodiac. In cherishing his memory, it would be in the fitness of things if a generous selection from all his writings could be brought together in a uniform series of well-edited volumes. Well, that was done eventually, you know what I mean? But it's the wind that blows.
Be still, it's the wind
that blows. In Mr. Arthur Osborne's death, we have lost a great editor and writer. He was loved by all who came in contact with him personally or through his writing, and it will be hard to fill the void. We offer our deepest sympathy and condolences to his wife and family and their bereavement. Absorbed in Sri Ramana Arunachala, may he live forever in our hearts. So he was instrumental in starting the ashram in America, Arthur Osborne. Because he's the one in 1961
yes,
about Bhagavad. When you go back...
Put the living seed.
Put the seed. We used to... You know, he had passed away when I first went there, but we used to... His wife, we knew. We would go over, she would invite us for tea, she would discuss everything.
So he has only one surviving children now, like...
Too much about... What happened to Sonia, the youngest
one? I heard, I don't know, but she committed suicide or something. She was the artist.
Uh-huh.
She went back to England. I don't know all the detail, you know. But, you know, Adam died there. He had that brain disorder.
Yes. We were able to dig up a good bit about Adam,
yeah. Did you get what he wrote about the Tamil?
Yes.
That article?
Yes, the one on the...
I was lecturing all
the
Tamilians.
Yeah, that's been published.
The last or Lekkam.
You know, I remember in the New York Times reading the Osborne computer. In New York Times they had a half a page article on him.
Yes.
When he came out with that.
There are a lot of technical biographers who are still writing about him.
So what happened, it was very famous, his desktop computer, one of the first ones, everything, and he manufactured, 100,000 of them or something like that, and you know what happened.
He
announced a new one.
Yes, I mean, they had still a stock of 80% of whatever computer, and then he goes on stage and says, well, our next thing is ready. So nobody wanted to buy the rest.
And it's so much better than this one. Yeah.
so they bankrupt. Actually call it the Osborne effect. Mm-hmm. So he killed his own company.